Thanks, Gary. So it's a pleasure to be here. So if we follow the, in standard Big Bang cosmology, if we follow the evolution of the universe back in time, we will always encounter an initial singularity where all our non-physics knows break down. And in the inflation universe, the story is slightly more complicated, but it's generally believed still there will be a singularity before inflation. So the presence of these Big Bang singularities raises some most puzzling questions in physics, like what's the meaning of time, what's before Big Bang, and whether actually makes sense to ask such kind of questions scientifically. In this talk, I will try to describe some recent attempt to attack this issue from string theory. And I should mention at the beginning that this is a long-term program, and we are only at the beginning of it. So in this talk, I will not report success. Instead, I will try to give you a feeling how we are going to attack this problem and what's the task ahead of us. So my plan is the following. Is this the...
There's also a stick.
Oh, a stick. Okay, thanks. So my plan is the following. I will first just remind you what's a space-time singularity, and then I will just review some elementary aspect of string theory, which is the main framework I'm going to use to attack this problem. And then I will discuss like two examples of singularities in general relativity, which have already been understood very well from string theory point of view. And then I will describe the recent effort in string theory to understand this question. And I will conclude with some lessons and the implications of the work. So to define a singular space-time or space-time singularity is a highly technical and a complicated issue. So here I'm just going to say it in the heuristic language. So basically, a space-time is singular if there exists at least one freely falling particles or photons, which they just end or begun its existence within a finite of time. So at even more heuristic level, a space-time singularity is a place where certain pathological behavior of the metric take place, and for example, the curvatures blows up, or some component of the metric become developing some pathological behavior. So here's some familiar examples of singularities. So the first is the Big Bang, which I mentioned at the beginning, and in certain cosmological models, for example, in the closed universe, it's also possible to have a big crunch singularity in the future development of the universe. So the universe will eventually, so in those models, the universe will collapse to a singular point. And the big crunch singularity can be considered as some kind of time reflection of a Big Bang singularity. So they raise the problem, is there like beginning or end of time, that these singularities. Another familiar example is the singularity from the collapsing of a star. So if a star is sufficiently massive, it will eventually undergo completely gravitational collapse to form a singularity. The singularity is often hidden behind the event horizon of a black hole. There are lots of evidences suggest that there are there is such a massive black hole, for example, in the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And my third example is the space-time around the infinite thin cosmic strings. So cosmic string creates a deficit angle around it, in the geometry around it. So if you go around a circle around the cosmic string, instead of transverse the angular distance 2 pi, you find actually the distance is smaller than 2 pi. So when this cosmic string is infinitely thin, there is the position of the singularity, or the position of the cosmic string where the cosmic string sits is a conical singularity. So because the space is effectively is a cone. In the early days of general relativity, people were wondering whether singularities are just some pathological behaviors of some special examples. And if you look at more generic examples, maybe you can actually avoid them. However, Hawking and Penrose, they showed that actually generic solutions of general relativity are actually singular. Especially, there's no way to avoid a singularity in our past. So there's always a Big Bang singularity, at least from classical general relativity. So at these singularities, the standard notion of space-time breaks down, and also the general relativity and other long physics laws like quantum field theory, they also break down. So it's a mysterious to understand what's happening at the singularity. So in the book of Misner, Thorn and Wheeler, in their great book on gravitation, they called it the Big Bang singularity, the greatest crisis of physics. And the reason is that the space-time which we, based on which we think about our physics, seems to break down. So to understand singularities, we have to go beyond the general relativity. Logically, there's two possible ways of doing that. So the first is to modify it at the classical level, and still it's consistent with the observational tests of GR, but somehow try to modify it so that the singularities no longer exist. And this has been tried many, many times before, including Einstein himself. And the second approach is say, maybe we really need the full quantum gravitational physics to understand what singularity means. So the heuristic idea is that the quantum fluctuation turns out to smear the point structure. So maybe in the full quantum gravitational physics, there's no such structure like a point. So maybe that's the way we can smooth out the singularities using the quantum fluctuations. So in this talk, I will mainly try to attack this problem using the framework of string theory. As we shall see, string theory actually combines the both approach in the very interesting and a coherent way. In quantum field theory, we say particles are just point-like objects, and they propagate in space-time. The interaction between the particles, they just corresponding to the interactions between the particles corresponding to the particle like splitting and joining to each other. And string theory says, actually, if you look at these elementary particles closely enough, you will find that they're actually not point-like. They're actually like one-dimensional objects. They're strings, basically like a one-dimensional object. They're strings. And the interactions of the strings are just simply described by splitting or joining of strings. For example, in this diagram, we have a string and splitting into two strings. Also, if you just look at this diagram upside down, just corresponding to two strings joining into one string. So they are basic interactions in string theory. And the point particle limit only arises when you look at the string from afar, so that you are not able to resolve the scale of the string, then you see a point particle limit. So the point particle description will arise only in the low energy description. And there are two basic parameters of string theory. So one is so-called the tension of the string. So basically just describe the tension of the string. And this is the only scale parameter of the theory and actually decides all other scale is based on this. And another parameter is a dimensionless parameter, basically describe the strength of the interaction of strings. So that basically describe how likely a string will split into two strings, or how likely two strings will join into one. And when G string is when G string is equal to zero, we basically just have a free string propagating spacetime with no such interaction, with no such splitting or joining. And the perturbation theory corresponding to G string is very, very small. At present level, string theory is mostly formulated as a perturbation theory. So basically, when normally assumed the coupling constant, the interaction strength is very weak, and we do everything in terms all the observable quantities or physical quantities we expand in terms of power series of the coupling constant. And in this theory, we have like perturbative degrees of freedom. They include like graviton, Young-Mills field, and etc. And for this perturbative degree of freedom, their mass have a well-defined limit in the free string limit. So when you take the G string goes to zero, those degrees of freedom have a well-defined limit. Much progress in the last few years have been made to understand many non-perturbative aspects of the theory. For example, many non-perturbative degrees of freedom, like solitons, swirly solitons, deep brains, or black holes, were discovered and studied in detail. And one important feature of this solitonic, of this non-perturbative degrees of freedom, is that their mass depends on the inverse power of G-string. So when the G-string is very, very small, their mass tend to be very, very large. So they are not visible in perturbation theory. But in the extreme condition, like in high energy or close to the singularity, etc., those non-perturbative or at very large coupling, at very strong coupling, these non-perturbative degrees of freedom can be very important for our understanding of physics. Also, in certain circumstances, we already have some non-perturbative formulation of the theory, like matrix theory and the ADS-CFT. So to give you an example how perturbative string theory works, let me just look at the example of two graviton scattering to two graviton. So we start with two graviton initial state and ask what's the amplitude, what's the probability to go to the some certain graviton fellow states. And in perturbation theory, this amplitude can be written as a power series in G string, and the first term corresponding to the tree level term, and the second is one loop term, and the higher order term, etc. So the tree level term in space time just can be considered as two incoming streams. So each one represent a graviton initial state, and they come in and they join each other and then split. So we have one joining and one split. So that's why you see G string square here. And this diagram corresponding to a one loop diagram. So here we have a string running in the intermediate, in the intermediate stage, and here you have like four splitting and joining. So you have a G string force. Also, you have some higher order corrections, like higher loop corrections. One of the most remarkable aspects of string theory is that all these quantum higher order, all these quantum corrections, they are exactly computable. They are finite and exactly computable. So to appreciate this point a little bit more, let me just remind you what's happening if we just try to treat gravity around flat space-time as a field theory. So if you expand Einstein gravity around flat space-time and treat it as field theory, this field theory, the basic coupling constant of this field theory is Planck constant. It's a gravitational constant, which have dimension n squared, so corresponding to a non-normalizable coupling. So the field theory is a non-normalizable one. So such kind of loop diagrams, which corresponding to you have two particles exchanging two gravitons, for example, and they are just infinite, and one cannot extract sensible quantum corrections, quantum gravitational corrections to this kind of process. In contrast, in string theory, as I just mentioned, the corresponding diagrams, they are all finite and exactly computable. So the reason is that just because when you go to the particle, to the string, basically you expand each like point structure into a cylinder, into a line structure, into a cylinder, so the interaction no longer occur at points. So basically your interaction are smeared out. So that's the way which string theory eliminates the UV problem in general relativity when you treat it as a field theory. And thus for this reason, we think string theory is a very promising candidate for consistent quantum gravitational theory. To make connection between string theory and just the standard gravity, standard Einstein gravity, the best way is to look at the low energy expansion of string theory. So the low energy of expansion of string theory can be effectively written as such kind of effective Lagrangian. So this is a double expansion. And the expansion is in terms of the curvature times alpha prime, so one over alpha prime is the string tension, and the coupling constant is string square. So in this first bracket corresponding to the classical alpha prime correction, and here we are corresponding to the higher order G string corrections. And the Planck's, the standard Planck scale can be identified this way. So at very low energy, which is the both G string and this expansion parameter are very small, only the first term is important. So basically this recovers Einstein's gravity. But around the singularity or at high energy, the higher order terms will become very important. And then we have to treat the higher order terms exactly. And I should mention that here, basically here, just said string theory already modifies the Einstein gravity at classical level. So you have all these higher order corrections. So in the following, I will use this language. So in the following, I will say a perturbative string analysis corresponding to, we treat this expansion exactly. So we treat non-perturbatively this expansion, but still to a perturbative expansion in G string. This I call perturbative analysis, or exact, or yeah, just exact perturbative analysis. And when we treat G string non-perturbatively, that's corresponding to the corresponding to a full quantum gravitational, yeah, full quantum treatment of strings. So now I will discuss two examples, which right. So based on that, the string theory is a promising candidate for quantum gravity. Then, when it's natural to ask, what happens to the singularities in GR in string theory? Can they be resolved? So what we mean by resolved is that one should be able to compute like all physical quantities in the unambiguously and well-defined way. So this question can be, as I just mentioned, yeah, can be asked by two levels, just mostly because our current formulation of string theory is still perturbative. So whether actually this singularity just resolved in perturbative string theory, or actually we need the non-perturbative description. So we actually need the exact treatment in the G string expansion. So the first level of the problem is much simpler, is because one can do it using perturbation theory. So now let me describe two examples which has been already successfully understood. So my first example is the conical singularity. So think about the cone, just a Euclidean two-dimensional space. And so you can also think there are some transverse directions, yeah, some other time direction and the transverse direction. And the time direction does not play a role here. This is a static geometry. So just consider this two-dimensional cone. And so this corresponding to the tip of the cone, and the cross-section of the cone is a circle. So the tip of the cone has the curvature has a data function at the tip of the cone. And if you look at the time like or law like geodesics which hit the tip of the cone, you find that there's no ambiguous and well-defined way to continue this geodesics beyond. So this point is a singular. And if you try to do quantum field theory in this space-time, you also find that the quantum field theory becomes singular. So to understand this question, actually, I will try to simplify my problem a little bit, trying to look at not generic conical singularities, but look at the subclass of them. So we'll look at the subclass of these cones, which corresponding to those can be obtained by the discrete identifications of flat space. Yeah, just can be obtained by the discrete identification of the flat Euclidean space. And they are normally called the orbifolds. So here's the example. If we take just the Euclidean two-dimensional plane, and we identify points which are related by this operation, just by putting a minus sign in each coordinate. And then, for example, this point is identified with this point. So when you do that, because every point in the lower half plane is identified with a point in the upper half plane, so you don't have, so you can only restrict yourself to the upper half plane and with the real axis, like identified, and with the origin is a fixed point of this identification. And now if you just fold this real axis, so basically you get a cone, and the origin now, which is a fixed point of this identification, becomes the tip of the cone. So the simplification of this orbifold is that now if you look at the geodesics hitting the tip of a cone, you can actually find a mathematically consistent way to extend it beyond this singularity. So the way you just unfold this cone again to the upper half plane, and then using this D2 symmetry go to lower half plane, and then you just look at the image of this trajectory in the plane, and it will just go through, and then you can using the D2 symmetry again to fold this part in the lower half plane back into upper half plane. So if you do that and you find that give a unique procedure to extend this geodesics beyond this singularity. So this is very suggestive. This suggests we might be able to even define a quantum field theory in this spacetime using the similar method. Say we can try to define a quantum field theory in the cone just by projecting, just take a quantum field theory on R2, and then we project into the subspace of the original Hilbert space, which are invariant under this identification. Then the resulting space will be automatically well defined on this quotient space on the cone. And we find that actually you can indeed do this consistently at classical level, and all the computation you do actually can be consistent at classical level. But however, a field theory defined this way is actually not unitary at quantum level. So if you look at loop diagrams, you will find if you do such kind of projection, your loop diagram will generically be divergent and cannot be renormalized. So even for this simplified conical space, like orbifolds, the quantum field theory is still pathological. And if you try to quantize the gravity in this space using the standard method, you will also find similar problems. String theory solves this problem by introducing new degrees of freedom. So basically, the extended nature of strings requires that when you do such kind of quotient procedure to obtain a cone, you actually have to introduce some additional degrees of freedom. And you find you have to introduce some kind of additional degrees of freedom which are localized at the tip of the cone, and they're normally called the twisted sectors. And now you see when you include these twisted sectors, the string theory amplitudes are unitary, and physics is completely smooth. So the any physical quantity you want to ask will be well defined. So this is example. And I want to emphasize that this twisted sector as just simply corresponding to the perturbative string state. So this is an example which string theory resolves the singularity at the perturbative level. So my next example is a little bit more complicated, so we'll be very brief, and we're not going into details. So another example is so-called the Corning fault. So this arises from the compactification of string theory trying to get a grand unified theory. So this space is a six-dimensional cone. So now this corresponding to the radial direction. And now at each constant radius, instead of having a circle, you have a three sphere times a two sphere. So this is a six dimensional. So this is a cone in a six dimensional space. And one finds that if you try to do physics on this space, you find that the generativity is singular. And the classical string theory or perturbative string theory is also singular. But now, if you try to include some non-perturbative degrees of freedom, which actually become important at the tip of the cone, the physics is smooth again, and actually, for physical quantities, you can have a well-defined way to find the smooth answer. So this is an example which which the singularity in GR are resolved by non-perturbative stream physics. So let me just summarize the lessons in the above two examples. So string theory introduces new degrees of freedom, and by including the appropriate degrees of freedom, which become important as the singularities, one finds that these singularities which occur in GR become completely smooth. And those singularities, they arise in general relativity just simply because the relevant degrees of freedom are not visible in GR. So because if you just ignore some relevant degrees of freedom, you find that the physics is singular. So in the above, I discussed two examples. Both of them are static geometries. So they correspond to the singularities in the static space-time, which there's no dynamical evolution. Now, if one tries to think about cosmological singularities, and one encounter like new subtleties, new difficulties. First, the time evolution become dynamical and non-trivial. So the singularities occur at some finite time. And so this occurs at finite time. So this requires to understand the meaning of time as the singularity. So there are again several logical possibilities. So the first, just the singularity corresponds to the beginning or the end of time. So if this is the case, then we need to supply initial conditions, for example, to find the wave functions of the universe, etc., using the Hartle-Hawking and or other approach. And another possibility is that maybe time just has no beginning or end. Then one have to try to understand how to pass through the singularity, how to extrapolate through time through the singularity. And of course, there may be other possibilities we haven't thought of. For example, maybe just time is no longer a fundamental concept. Like in the past, during the last few years in string theory, we have found that space is not a fundamental concept. Basically, it's an emergent concept at the classical level, at the semi-classical level. So maybe similar thing happens to time, and time become an emergent concept and only applicable at the semi-classical level. So we hope string theory as a candidate for quantum gravity will lead to a detailed theory of the Big Bang singularity. And if that's possible, that may yield, for example, some experimental tests of string theory or quantum gravity. And again, in this case, we have to, for the cosmological singularity, we have to ask our questions at two levels, whether the cosmological singularity is smoothed out in classical string theory or perturbation string theory. Yeah, by classical string theory, I mean just perturbative string theory, or one need a fully non-perturbative quantum treatment. So in this talk, I will mainly trying to explore the second possibilities. Just trying to look at some simple examples just to see whether there's a possibility to extrapolate beyond the singularities. So for this purpose, I will look at the toy model. Instead of looking at the realistic space-time, realistic Big Bang cosmology, I will look at the toy model. So my model is like this. I will consider time in this direction. This can be the real time or or light cone time, and have a circle which are infinitely large at t equal to minus infinity, at the time equal to minus infinity, and then this circle shrink to zero size and expand again. So to observer who are living around this future cone, to him there's a past Big Bang singularity, and at which he cannot extrapolate beyond classically. And to observer at the past cone, there is a Big Crunch singularity in the future, which classically he can also not extrapolate beyond. So in GR. So now we want to ask whether this is possible in string theory. And I should mention, just for the simplicity of the technical analysis, we should look at such kind of spacetime which can be obtained by the discrete identification of flat Lorentzian spacetime. And they were first introduced by Horowitz and Stieff in string theory. And so we should looking at some time-dependent orbifolds with this kind of geometry. So why are we actually interested in this type of toy model? Yeah, this type of very simplified space-time. So one reason is actually this model has been proposed in some recently cosmological scenarios to as alternative to the standard inflation universe, and they use this kind of orbifold constructions to try to extrapolate beyond the singularity. And another important reason is just because it's simplicity, so we can do an exact perturbative string analysis. So we can actually find concrete results. And the third reason, the singularity, although are simple just from the identification of flat Lorentzian space-time, they actually have certain universality. They occur in certain black holes, or in many other more complicated cosmological backgrounds. So if you look at some more cosmological background and zooming in at the singularity, you find the structure of the singularities are actually just the same as the quotient of the flat space-time. So what we will try to do is try to compute S matrix in string theory from this past cone to future cone. So first we will assume string theory can indeed extrapolate beyond this singularity, and based on assumption we compute some fluctuations in the past and to see the amplitude in going into the future. If we can find a sensible unitary and a well-defined S matrix, and that would strongly suggest such kind of extrapolation is possible. But if we find the S matrix become singular, then that would imply either the assumption we can extrapolate beyond is not right, or the formalism breaks down. So instead of giving you technical details, let me just state the result. So what we find is that when we try to compute the S matrix from one cone to the other, for generic kinematics, the amplitude in string theory are finite, where they are generically diverge if you try to do it in general relativity. And one can actually understand this finiteness in string theory from just softness of strings at high energy. And at high energy, strings become very floppy, and they tend to soften the divergence. Yeah, the divergent behavior in GR. But however, there's a very special kinematics in the near forward scattering, one finds actually the string amplitude diverge.
What do you mean by the moment?
So if you start with a particle with momentum p, and you get the same p out in the outcoming particle.
But can I get any orientation with respect to this point of the cone?
Right. Right. Before the scattering, I just mean the incoming momentum is approximately the same as outgoing momentum. Right. So,
right. You're talking about two strings colliding.
That's right.
Now, in this case, the perturbative string theory, the result is finite. But you had another example in which you had to go to non-perturbative. So, how do I know, is there some understanding of what in what case you have to go to the non-perturbative string theory?
No, I don't think we have a systematic understanding at the moment. Just case by case.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, just by case studying, right?
So for this particular space-time, perturbative string theory seems to be okay.
It seems to be singular because...
Yeah.
So what I want to emphasize here is actually, although this divergence only happens at very special kinematics, this divergence is actually very bad. It just means the S matrix actually does not make sense.
I see.
So actually, at least from string perturbation theory point of view, the S matrix seems to be singular.
What about non-perturbative string theory? Has this been calculated?
No, we don't really know how to do that at the moment. Yeah, we'll comment on that later. So, although the computation is a little bit involved, in the end, the real physics and the origin of the divergence can be just described in very simple terms. So the basic reason is that this background basically is time dependent. So the energy is not conserved. So in this case, in the typical scattering process, the energy is not conserved, and so in the typical scattering process, actually that involves particles of arbitrary energies, and that's basically just because the energy of the incoming particles is always blue shifted by the contraction at the singularity, this infinite energy generates a very large gravitational back reaction to the geometry. So that tends to distort your geometry. So as a result, the string theory, string perturbative expansion breaks down just as a result of this large back reaction. So one thing I want to emphasize is that, well, in string theory, for some generic kinematics, this problem has been avoided. So for this special kinematics, this problem seems still there and makes the perturbation theory to break down. So let me just comment a few on what we learned from here. So what we find is that classical string theory is singular in this kind of time-dependent orbifolds. And what we find is that extended nature of strings, although make the behavior of the S matrix slightly somewhat better than what we find in general relativity, but still not sufficient to resolve the singularity. And for this reason, we really need to understand of the full non-perturbative quantum string theory, to explain the physics at the singularity. So it's still not clear is that whether we need the non-perturbative physics to go through the singularity, or you cannot go through the singularity. So this is still not very clear at the moment. So let me just mention, put it in the some slightly broader perspective. The idea of going from a big crunch to a big bang through some kind of long singular bounce actually is a long idea. It's an old idea which has a very long history. Like in the 30s, Einstein considered doing that, and the Tolman studied some kind of cyclic universe which using similar formalism. The singularity theorems of Hawking and Penrose basically ruled out this possibility in general relativity, and basically in GR this cannot be possible. And so the recent suggestion that one might be able to pass through the singularity is mostly motivated by this classical string theory construction. And we see at least that the classical string theory is also singular in this background, so it cannot be trusted. So we still don't understand, at least from the perturbative string theory point of view, what's going to happen at the singularity. So let me just, in the end, just summarize. So string theory is a promising candidate for consistent theory of quantum gravity, but it's in certain backgrounds, in for example, flat space and anti-de-Sitter space, string theory eliminates the divergence in general relativity and solve the UV problem. And we also have seen certain singularities in GR are resolved in perturbative string theory, while others are resolved by using non-perturbative string theory or using by invoking non-perturbative degrees of freedom. And understanding cosmic singularities is a very big challenge for string theory. And we believe string theory has big potential to make progress in this direction. And so what we find is that we actually need to develop new non-perturbative tools to understand this problem. Thank you. Right. I don't know the answer to this question, naively I would say, you just say, suppose I just give you a universe, and this universe involves T equal to minus infinity to T plus infinity. I already know the total history of the universe. That would be already satisfactory. Maybe I don't. Yeah. Yeah, then it's another question, is where this universe actually come from. And
do you expect there will be a lot of universes which collapse down the singularity right now, or only a few special ones, say with high degrees of symmetry?
Right. Yeah, that I don't know. That certainly could be possible. But I think if you can do that in some examples, then there's reason to expect it might be more generic. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so you said the classical string theory singular. As other points, you said when you deploy non-perturbative techniques,
right,
you overcome the singularity. I'm confused. Is this non-perturbative effects same as quantum or yeah?
Right. That's a fully quantum statement, right? So you have to take into account of some non-perturbative H-bar effect, not just perturbative expansion. Right, that could be possible. Yeah, that could be possible. I believe that's the Yeah, people have been thinking about this kind of idea for a long time. Yeah, I think that could be possible, but at the moment we don't have such kind of control in string theory yet to see whether that makes a significant effect. Right. Yeah, but I think that's indeed still a very interesting possibility.
Even if we cannot go through the singularity, then it is possible for time to have no beginning.
Okay.
Because the Hartle-Hopkins invention.
Right.
Time has no beginning.
But I think basically Hartle-Hopkins wave function says time has a beginning and you just give the initial conditions to the time, right?
No, but there's no one fixed time.
Yeah, that's right.
So if time is an emergent concept, it could well be described.
True.
At the same level.
True. Yeah, so, right. So one possibility is indeed maybe you have some kind of some kind of intrinsic description of the universe and the time only emerges as a semi-classical limit of that intrinsic description, right? Yeah, certainly.
Okay, thank our speaker again.